Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc Jordy specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasites, new heights, phaser fights, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle stations!
Next generation on your favorite station. We didn't start the series, but when we are gone, it'll feel beyond. We didn't start the series. It's the next generation on your favorite station. We didn't start the series.
Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to Comic Corner, presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York, the Star Trek edition. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Transformers issue number 4 and the brand new Q Conflict issue number 1. If you're listening to my voice live right now, it's Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You know what that means? That means the studio lines are open, 646-668-2433. And if you'd like to call and talk about the Star Trek in comics, even if it's not one of the ones we're talking about tonight, if you read a really good Star Trek comic and you want to share it with us, give us a call, 646-668-2433. We're all about the Star Trek here, and we'd love to hear from you. Now, I don't have any awesome Leslie Hoffman autographs to give away or anything like that, so all you're going to get if you call is to talk to me and my Trek experts and share your opinions on Star Trek. So 646-668-2433 is the number. Please give us a call. Also, if you like Comic Corner, if you like Stunt Treks, and if you like Trek Talking, which will be on Thursday night, go over to patreon.com/trektalking and see about becoming a patron. We could really use your help, and we have some great tiers and some great gifts to give away. And once we get to 10 patrons, we're sitting at 7. Once we get to 10, I have a really beautiful autographed Lieutenant Arium picture from Star Trek Discovery that I'd love to give away to one of our lucky patrons, but we need 3 more. So go over to patreon.com/trektalk and become a patron. Once we reach 10, it could be you that wins that picture. So with that, we're going to jump right into Star Trek versus Transformers, issue number 4. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to our comic book expert, from Freakopolis Geekery, TJ, take it away.
Thank you, Uncle Jim. Yeah, this is we're going to talk about the 4th issue of Star Trek versus Transformers. This is a mini series currently being published by IDW that sort of mashes up two of a pretty classic animated series, Star Trek and Transformers. And I say that because this really follows the animated crew of the Enterprise, including Emrys and others. So, it really follows through with that feeling. The art is perfectly in tune with that sort of mashup between, you know, mid-century Saturday morning cartoon stuff. And that's what brings this book a lot of its charm. With this 4th issue, we see the resolution of the fight between Fortress Tiberius, which is a transformed USS Enterprise clone controlled by Captain Kirk, and the Decepticon, I believe it's Trypticon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not super knowledgeable about Transformers. I've learned a lot through just this book, which has been really fun. But yeah, so we sort of see throughout the first half of the issue tons of bombastic action between those two. But before too long, the Decepticon Starscream decides to sort of betray everyone, if you will. And he goes off, he finds a bunch of dilithium crystals and then gets off planet with them, leading both the Transformers themselves, the Autobots, and the crew of the USS Enterprise to potentially follow him through interstellar space into Klingon territory. And in the meantime, Megatron and the Decepticons decide to follow suit as well because, they're kind of pissed at Starscream for getting away with some very precious, valuable resources. So Another really, you know, great fight scene in the beginning, and then a little development of the plot working towards the finale in the back half of the book. And as we've said in the past, you know, this is just a super fun, sort of goofy, casual, not a lot of, you know, potential, like, canon-adjacent stuff happening here. It's mostly just, you know, what you would expect in the mashup of two great classic series. So it's been really fun so far, and like I said, I've learned a lot, and I love the homages to both series throughout the whole thing. There's tons of quotes, and all the characters are, you know, always acting as though they were really straight from their cartoons. And, you know, they make it fit pretty well together. It seems like a weird mashup, but IDW has done this before, and I think they've sort of tuned in how to combine some of their great properties they have access to.
Yeah, I think that what makes this work, on the surface you might think this sounds pretty stupid. Transformers versus Star Trek, more than meets the eye. But you know what? The fact that they were both Saturday morning cartoons, and the fact that the artwork in these books, like TJ said, pretty much has that retro, you know, 70s, early 80s feel to it, just makes these books all the more authentic. You feel like a little kid watching, you know, this on television. It's really that good. The artwork for the TOS characters looks just like the animated series. Who did the art on this? Was it JK? No.
No,
this is Philip Murphy. I'm not familiar with his other works, but he's definitely able to capture that look and feel for sure from those cartoons. Philip Murphy.
Yeah, he did. I mean, MRS, Eryx, they all look great. The Enterprise, the Transformers, he did an outstanding job. And like TJ said, there's a lot of quotes in here. If you read it, you'll hear them. And one of the ones I like is one of the Klingons says at one point in the book, when they get captured and they're going to, you know, be prisoners, and the Klingon says, "Today is a good day to die." And I'm like, I chuckle to myself, because, you know, this is what Gowron says on Deep Space Nine. So I thought, well, that wasn't from the cartoon, but it was clever that they threw that in there if you caught it. And there's a lot of little nods like that throughout this book. You'll hear a lot of quotes, and a lot of characters say a lot of things, and you'll say, oh, where have I heard that before? And you think about it for a second, and then you'll realize where it came from. And I'm with TJ. I think they did an excellent job on this book, and particularly seeing MRS. And we did hear on Discovery before, when Conley was mansplaining before he got blasted by the asteroid, he did say that when he went to the Academy, one of his roommates was a Cajun. And I'm thinking maybe it was MRS. You know, I thought it was great that they mentioned that, and now we have her in the books. I always liked her. I thought, you know, Major Barrett did a great job voicing that character. And so that was awesome to see her. But, yeah, I'm with TJ. I really enjoyed this book. I like the artwork. And I really like the way they meld them together so seamlessly. It's almost like they knew what they were doing. So, yeah, I definitely would give this one a thumbs up. I'm looking forward to see what happens when Starscream reaches Kronos, because he's on his way there to conquer the planet and become the ruler. So we'll see what happens when he gets there. So, yeah, I agree with TJ. I give this one a thumbs up. It's a fun read, and it's, you know, it's a lot of fun. It reminds you of being a kid. What about you, Eric?
Oh, I really like this book. I'm kind of in a Transformers renaissance of my own. You know, the Transformers collectible card game came out a little while ago, and Wave 2 of that game just came out this same month. And, of course, we've got some Star Trek Transformers crossover books, plus we've got Star Trek books, plus we've got Discovery. So I'm just in Transformer versus Star Trek crossover mode right now. This book is great. I loved it from the very first opening shot. Spoiler alert, the very first shot is Fortress Tiberius doing one of those Kirk style two-handed fist punches to Triptychon, which I just thought was like, oh, that's so cool, because
oh,
not
yeah.
only is it Not only is it Transformers, but it's like the classic Kirk move, which I don't think actually makes you hit things harder. I don't know. I don't really understand the physics of it, but loved that. I loved the panel layouts throughout the entire book are really dynamic. Like there are a lot of times that one picture kind of bleeds over another panel, or the panel lines are kind of diagonal. They switch it up. Sometimes there are borders around the panels. Sometimes there aren't. So from an artistic stand, not only are the likenesses and kind of just the line work and coloring in it and that sort of stuff good, but I just really dig the dynamic panel layout. It kind of keeps you guessing from page to page. I love the look of the Fortress Tiberius. I mean, how many of us want this toy right now? Like 100% of us, right?
Tell me they're not making one, because I'll have to buy one.
I know.
They do.
I would spend $200 on this toy, man. This thing would be so cool to have an Enterprise that could transform into a robot, and the little companion Triptychon that transforms into a D7. Yeah, other things I loved about the book, like you guys were talking about, little homages. I don't know if you've noticed that when they show everybody transporting in all of these books, they show the transporter little swirls around the bodies, like our Blade in the Kelvin universe transporters. So I think that's kind of a cool thing, because here we're not in the Kelvin universe, but we've got a little homage to it by the way that people actually look when they transport. It's not the rain falling down from above like TNG, or the dematerialization of TOS. It's the kind of swirly dematerialization of the Kelvin universe movies. Thought that was super cool. And then the thing that I just really like about this book the best is the way that it ends. And you've already talked a little bit about it, Jim, but Starscream in the end, this is classic Transformers. He's always trying to break away from Megatron and either become the leader of the Decepticons, or, you know, earn his own honor in his own way, or get his own lackeys, or that kind of thing. So this is true Transformers form, that Starscream should be the kind of nemesis to both Megatron and Kirk in this, and presumably Optimus Prime, if he ever actually plays a part in this story again. He's kind of been in the background for a little while. But love this book. Loved it. So many thumbs up from me.
If I remember correctly, he was badly injured in the first book, and I think he's still recovering from his injuries, and that's why he hasn't been front and center.
That is true. Yeah, he was pretty badly, and they've actually been really consistent with the way they've shown him, kind of with a smashed out front windshield throughout all the books. So I've been paying attention to make sure they didn't, miss that, and they never did.
No, they've been very true to the story they've created, which is great. Yeah, I'm really liking it. Really liking it a lot. How about you, Charles? What did you think about this?
Well, everybody's kind of said the input I would put in. Definitely, I'm enjoying the series. As Eric said, I very much agree that that kind of ending we got with Starscream reminding me exactly what Starscream would do. Megatron's trying to sit there and take the situation, and Starscream sneaks off and tries to do it his own way and get power and control it by himself. Yeah, that's Starscream. That's exactly what he would do. But this entire series reminds me, it's like, okay, I'm watching a 70s Star Trek animated series. At the same time, I'm watching a mid-80s Transformers episode. And they're mixed together so perfectly that it's like, yeah, I feel like I'm watching this on TV. The young kid of me just sitting there watching this stuff on TV as a cartoon, or as a younger adult still watching cartoons. But this reminds me of what I'd see on the TV set. They really have.
So here's my question. Charles, do you think if they did this as a cartoon, do you think they would use that choppy animation that they use for TOS or TAS, where only their mouths moved and stuff like that? Or do you think they would make it like an actual cartoon like the Transformers was?
I think they'd do a mix of both. I think they'd get a little bit of 70s feel in there, but they'd get that 80s Transformers. There was only a minor difference between the two eras. We got a little more animation in there, but we still didn't have the computer capabilities that we did in the 90s and 2000s.
No, you're right. There's not much.
But I'm more the point of, like, just if CBS grabbed this and ran this set of series at a set of shows on CBS All Access, I'd sit there and watch through them.
Oh, definitely.
In fact, I think I'd be sitting through almost every one of the comic book series because they've been put together so well.
IDW has been consistently excellent when it comes to their Star Trek titles. I definitely give them that.
Well, Charles is right. The way this one is actually written, like it reads like an episode. It's almost like this could almost be a script directly taken into the TV show. It just flows very much like a TV show.
Yeah, they're outstanding. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to say, too bad that you guys. I watched JK's live drawing to see if any of us won all the awesome prizes that he gave away. And unfortunately, none of us did.
Nope.
Nah, bummer.
Nope.
he added a lot of great stuff at the end there.
Oh,
yeah. He started really adding stuff at the end. That was cool. It's almost like he was walking around his room just like finding stuff during that one video.
Well,
like,
I think when he had two copies of 2020,
uh-huh.
and we only gave one away here at the show. I think that second one that he had went out with the contest. That's where that second copy of 2020 came in.
And Charles, the yellow poster of Laurel as Rosie the Riveter, didn't they give that away at Las Vegas?
Three copies of that one, the full size, went out in Vegas.
Such a cool poster.
And that's the exact poster. Remember when I've talked about that that actress, J.K. caught her, and she signed posters? That's the poster she signed.
Oh, Mary Chifo?
She's the best.
Yep, that's the one Mary Chifo signed. She signed, oh, you're giving these away? Well, you can't give these away yet. They have to have my autograph on them first.
She's so cool.
So when
I would love to meet her at a convention.
Posters, oh, you got to see her at a convention. She's so worth it. She is such...
I would love to meet her.
Yeah.
So
oh,
listen,
so
guys,
hyper.
We're going to take a quick... We're going to take a very quick station identification break at this point in time. Don't touch your dial. Don't go away. When we come back, we're going to find out what Jamie thought about Transformers versus Star Trek issue number 4 right after this quick station identification break.
Hi, this is Jamie from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best sci-fi themed podcast. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and sci-fi themed content. 682433, Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Coast Time. We can't wait to hear from you. Live long and prosper.
That's right. Listen to Jamie. Call 646-668-2433 right now. And we'll get you on the air, and you can share your opinions on Star Trek versus Transformers, the Q conflict, or any Star Trek comic book that you want to talk about. We're here, and we'd love to hear from you. And speaking of Jamie, what did you think about Star Trek versus Transformers issue number 4?
Well, I thought it was very well done, and you know me with commenting on the art. I went through it with a fine-tooth comb, and I didn't find anything wrong with it. It was great. All the art was great, and I can't express how much I love the art on the whole Enterprise Transformer from 1701 across the chest. It just reminds me of the Enterprise version of Optimus Prime, which is essentially what it is. And as far as the storyline, I didn't find anything wrong with that either. I would agree with from what I heard. I'm sorry. I apologize for being late. I agree with everything that's said so far. I think this book was great. I don't know. Are we to the scoring part yet, or did I miss that?
No, no. You're just in time, actually.
Okay. Then I won't go any farther.
No. So I guess everybody liked it. So, TJ, what do you think about this one? 1 to 10, what do you give it?
1 to 10? I think this was I'm liking the sort of start of the third act of this more than maybe the beginning. It was off to a slow start, but it's really picked up nicely now. I think I'm at like a 7-8.
Cool. How about you, Charles?
I'll go with an 8.1.
Eric?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I'll give it 8 Energon cubes.
And how about you, James?
I think a 8.6 is fair for this book.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 8.675309 just to be different. So everybody seems to like this book, so there you have it. Run out and buy it. I mean, run, don't walk, to your nearest comic book distributor. Pick up a copy of Star Trek versus Transformers, issue number 4. You won't be disappointed. So, TJ, our next one we're going to talk about is issue number 1 of the Q Conflict. So why don't you get us started on that?
Yes, so this is the first issue of a, I believe, 6-part miniseries.
Yes,
6-part. You never know if it's 4, 5, 6. This one happens to be 6, so we'll begin it monthly for about a half of the year. Written by the Tipton brothers, long time. They've penned many IDW Star Trek books, and I quite like pretty much all of them, with pencils by David Messina. And so this takes place, what would that be, after Generations, Nemesis, with Picard go ahead.
I think it's after Nemesis, based on the fact that Geordi didn't have his visor and that it was on the Enterprise E. It's either Nemesis when they rebuilt the ship, or it's in between Insurrection and Nemesis, but it's right around that time frame.
Yeah, so a little further out than the Next Generation series itself. So I think this is maybe the furthest along comic we've had in quite a while. They've been surrounding sort of Discovery and Next Generation, the series, or prior to that, obviously. So this is a little further out than the fare we've been reading as of late. And yeah, as you said, this is from the sort of perspective so far of Picard and the Enterprise E. And while investigating a number of supernovas happening throughout the Beta Quadrant and the Gorn hegemony,
that's the Gorn music.
Thank you.
From the arena. So while investigating that, a number of supernovas within just the past couple days. An away team goes down to, I believe it's Cestus 3, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And yep. To try and save as many lives as possible, sort of organize a, an evacuation effort. And well down there, the sun that is about to go supernova returns to normal. Of course, that has the whole crew of the Enterprise wondering what's going on. They were sort of wondering it anyways, because like 8 supernovas in 3 days is sort of unusual. But when this one sort of rescinds its efforts, the crew is really, really curious as to what's going on. And of course, who is behind that? But our good friend Q. Q ends up on the bridge of the Enterprise E, discussing with Picard that there is a sort of like another dimensional war happening that is leaking into our dimension, and causing problems with our very stars. So Picard says, "Hey man, like aren't you guys above that?" And Q says, "Yeah, we sort of are actually. We're going to pick some champions, and you guys are going to sort of carry out this war for us." So who does he pick? And snap and transport to a battle world like thing, just like Beyonder or Marvel's Beyonder. Some of the most famous crews from all of Star Trek. We have the crew of the Voyager, the crew of DS9, the crew of the original Enterprise, and of course Picard and his crew themselves. They are still at a loss of sort of what's going on when they meet each other on this like open field, which was a really, really great scene. Seeing all the faces recognize each other. And, of course Kirk comes in last being like, "Hey, I don't quite recognize those uniforms, but I do recognize that insignia. So you must be the good guys." Then, these all powerful beings that have been fighting in another dimension sort of pick their captains of their teams. Captain Janeway going to the Metrons, Kirk going to Trelane, Picard going to Q himself, and Sisko, the Organians. Yeah, so they've got their captains, but it looks like the captains are going to have to pick the rest of their team, and that's sort of where the book leaves off. Super fun issue. I really liked this introduction. I was very excited for this series on the whole. I think it was maybe my favorite Star Trek book since like the annual we got with Stamets so far. I was very much all about this. Picard, obviously my favorite captain and crew and series. So to have it from his perspective, at least for this issue, I found very enjoyable. Q always throws a great wrench into this. And I think the concept is just really cool, this sort of battle royale between some of the most famous crews of all time. Sounds super fun, so I'm very, very excited for this series. It's the art is sort of somewhere between like J.K.'s and the Star Trek Transformers book. It's not particularly realistic, but as IDW always does very well, they get the likeness of the characters so good, so spot on that, you know, you always know exactly who you're looking at before you get any really indication of, you know, they don't have to spell it out for you. You know exactly who is in the focus of the panel and stuff, and that's always appreciated. Sometimes even with, like, Marvel books, it can be hard to tell, like, who's talking or, you know, what character was just jumped into the scene. So I always praise them for that because, you know, it makes reading easy. There's some really much more formal paneling than, like, as Eric mentioned, than the Star Trek Transformers, although they do break out of the boundaries a little bit. One instance that I thought was really cool and you know, used the medium of a comic really well or of visual storytelling was while they were on Cestus 3 organizing this evacuation effort. You can tell there's this, like, red-orange hue over the whole planet. And it's, you know, invading the background of every panel. Then they have this panel where Riker and one of the lieutenants on the planet sort of looking off to the edge, and that hue disappears, and you realize that there's something else at play here and that maybe the immediate threat isn't what you thought it was. So and they do that all just through visual storytelling, and I always really appreciate that stuff. So, yeah, awesome to see some of our favorite crews together meeting at last or once again, and you know, can't wait to see what Q has up his sleeve next. I really, really enjoyed this.
Now let me ask, I'm going to ask you guys, have you noticed that one particular location has been popping up again and again and again without actually us seeing it? But have you noticed that Cestus 3 has been front and center on pretty much every Star Trek project? We've heard it on Discovery, and it's in the comic books. You think something's going on with Cestus 3 here, and maybe we might actually get to go there and actually see a new Gorn? Or is this just a coincidence that they just all these happen to pick that planet? And for those of you who don't know, I'll explain it to you. Cestus 3 is the planet from the TOS episode Arena
where Captain Kirk meets the Gorn and the Metron has them fight to the death. It's a great episode. Happens on Cestus 3. And that particular planet keeps being mentioned over and over again. So that was my question to my Trekspurts. Do you think that's just a coincidence, or do you think there's something there?
I bet it's a coincidence. I bet it's a coincidence, but the one mention that I did like a lot on Discovery, the one that Leland made about being up to his neck in gators, that to me kind of went back to season one where we saw the Gorn skeleton in Lorca's menagerie. So I did like that they had kind of brought that up in Discovery. It feels like coincidence to me, though, that it's kind of popping up here and there. I don't know if there's some grand plan at work or not.
Well, let's not forget what J.K. told us. This is kind of canon adjacent, and a lot of times when they're working on these comic books, they have access to stuff that we haven't seen yet. And so the fact that they picked Cestus 3 after we heard Leland talk about gators, that's a big coincidence, but it could be, but hopefully not. What do you think, Charles?
Well, the thing is, we're dealing with the Metrons, and this may be one of their controlled planets, and Q may have decided, of all the planets, of all these gods, this might be a perfect place to go visit. Because we are dealing with a group of strong beings, godlike beings, meeting together. This may be one of the planets they chose that they feel they're going to visit. So it may be because the Metrons are in this book that they chose that specific planet.
Now, did you guys, when they picked the other cubes, I don't know what to call them, but I never really, Trelane, yeah, I could see Trelane maybe being a younger Q. I could buy that one. But the Metrons and the Organians, I never got the impression that they were part of the Q continuum.
No, I don't think that it's they're not all part of the Q continuum. What they are is this is four different kind of omnipotent races actually warring against each other. So Q's the only Q. And the other three races are different races, and they occasionally have some wars that only last a couple of centuries, according to Q here, and only cause a few supernovas here and there.
Nothing major.
Nothing major.
So,
but yeah, it's definitely
Eric,
something that feels. Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess I'll go.
What do you
right
think about the book?
Overall, I totally agree with what TJ said about the art and the panel layout and everything. I was going to comment on that. That was much more formal, but I did enjoy the book. I do like Q. I'm just going to put that out there. But then also sometimes I think of Q stories as a little bit kind of like magic finger stories. And so they get a little bit, they all kind of feel the same a little bit sometimes to me. But this one has me very interested, mostly because I love the kind of idea of drafting your team to fight this war for you. I mean, basically what Q says Picard told him to do in this book was to have the humans solve the conflict between these four different races. That's not actually what Picard said, but of course that's, Q twisting his words. And this is pretty reminiscent, not only what TJ said, but of the Marvel Superhero Contest of Champions books from the 80s, which were Grandmaster versus Death, each one drafting their own Marvel superheroes to go against one another. I think JK brought that up on one of our previous shows that we had him on. And so I like that idea of instead of it being everybody using their powers against each other, like a superhero type thing, it's these Star Trek teams that are being drafted. And so I can't wait to see what sorts of situations these omnipotent beings throw these guys into and how they actually solve each issue. So overall, I'm excited about this book. I was a little trepidatious about it before it came out just because Q stories are awesome, but they're just not always my favorite. But this book, I did dig overall, and the story, I'm very interested to see what happens in issue number two.
Yeah, I think you're right, Eric. When you're dealing with Q being the fact that he's omnipotent,
It really takes a lot of the there's really no urgency to a story because he could just snap his fingers and change anything he wants anytime he wants. So it changes the urgency of the story unless it's very well written and it's very well done. Like all the episodes that Q was on TNG were just outstanding, you know. So the comic book so far, and we're only at issue one, has that feel. You know, just like with the Transformers and Star Trek book, it feels like, yeah, you know, this could be, you know, a movie of the week or an episode. Well, it's too big to be one episode, but, you know, it could be a several story arc episode. It has that feel to it.
Yeah, and it's classic Q, too, because basically the way that he gets Picard to agree to this is he says, you know, if you don't agree to do this, then our war is going to spill over and, you know, some people might die. So I feel like Picard's always put in this situation where he has to defend humanity in a Q story. And it's more interesting to me in this one that it's not only Picard at this point, but it's all the captains kind of having to do it at the same time with their various teams.
And the strange thing about it is everybody's met Q except for Kirk. But Kirk knows Trelane and the Metrons and the Organians.
Yeah, so everybody's pretty well versed on who most of these beings are for sure. I love how they show up. The other ones show up as energy beings first when Q is first talking to Picard. They show up as energy first, and you don't find out till the end of the book who they actually are. I thought that was cool too.
Yeah, when they showed up on the rock there, I'm looking at them like who, and I'm thinking, who's the dude in the chair? Oh, he's an Organian. I thought it was Abraham Lincoln. You know that episode where Abraham Lincoln's floating in space?
Absolutely, yeah.
In his chair. I thought, Abraham Lincoln, what's he doing here? Oh, it's not Abraham Lincoln, it's an Organian. Anyways. So listen, guys, we have to take another quick commercial break here. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Charles and find out what Charles thought about the Q conflict, issue number one. Don't touch your dial. We'll be right back.
This is Chris from Trek Talking and Beyond, here to invite you to join us for the best science fiction-themed podcast on the internet. Our elite team of Trexperts are here to discuss Star Trek and other sci-fi-related content, and we want to hear from you. Dial 646-668-2433 on Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. on East Coast time. Hailing frequencies are always open, and we'll get you on the air to share your opinions. We have faith. You will call.
And we're back. So I want to say thank you to Charles, to Eric for putting together all those spots for us. They sound great. Thank you very much, Eric. So Charles, what did you think about Q Conflict issue number one?
Okay, well, I decided to grab my copy and take a look at it. And one of the pages I love in here is you see 2 years earlier, as you see the EMH and Janeway there, and Janeway disappears. 8 years earlier, Jake and Sisko are sitting there talking, and Sisko disappears. 110 years earlier, and you're seeing the bridge of the Enterprise, and everybody's missing. And then all of a sudden, you start seeing all these crews appear on the planet. And I just sat there and just, wow, this is, what a way of combining the series is something we would never be able to do because you couldn't get the young look of Kirk in there next to Picard and Sisko and Janeway. But to have all these people appear in there, it was just fascinating to see them in there. And I will tell you, I've already took a sneak peek into issue two. And issue two gets even better. And I was telling Eric, I was comparing issue two to almost like a Star Trek Attack Wing game. Because you pick who you want aboard your ship.
I don't have my book open in front of me, but you do. I just have a question that I don't remember when I read through it. First of all, is it Sisko with or without hair? Which version of Sisko is it?
Sisko's bald.
Oh, so it's the badass Sisko. Good, good. I didn't remember.
He says he's been on the station 3 years at that point.
Right. Yeah, that's about the time they got the Defiant about. And is the EMH there for the Voyager crew?
He does not get transported.
Nope.
I didn't remember.
No, it's the Seven. It's Kim, B'Elanna, Paris, Tuvok, Seven of Nine, Chakotay, and Janeway.
Okay, so the holographics, the EMH didn't make this trip. I wasn't sure. So I enjoyed this book immensely. I thought it was a lot of fun reading through it, and I'm looking forward to the next issue, which I happen to have. I just haven't looked at it yet, but I do have it. I loved it. Like Charles said, like everybody said before, to see all these crews together is going to be a lot of fun. There'll be a lot of interesting dynamics depending on who goes where and who does what with who. We could have some very interesting combinations. So
that's what you get in book two. You start getting in book two, you start seeing some interesting dynamics with captains dealing with different people.
Or maybe like with Bones dealing with Tuvok instead of dealing with Spock could bring up some interesting things. So I'm looking forward to reading it. And overall, I really enjoyed it. I thought, like TJ said, the artwork in this one wasn't as good as you're used to seeing in IDW books, but it wasn't bad. It just wasn't what they usually do. But I think that's because normally when they have these artists doing these books, they're doing, you know, a Deep Space Nine book, and they do a bunch of them in a row. They get used to drawing the likenesses of these characters so much that they can just do it in their sleep. Whereas when they're doing all the characters through all the Star Trek every month, you know, I think they have to get into drawing all these different characters over and over and over again. So hopefully by the time we get to the next issue or two, the artwork will be better, but it's not that bad. It's not bad enough to say I'm not going to read it, but I enjoyed it immensely. A lot of fun. Q's always great. And to see the Organians and the Metrons, you know, on the same page with Trelane and Q, it's going to be interesting. So I'm looking forward to it. And Jamie, you get to bring up the caboose on this issue. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I would agree. You never really can tell what Q is up to or what he's going to do next. He's like Doc Brown on Back to the Future. You know, you never really can tell. Are you going to either get the witty person? Are you going to get the serious person? Are you going to get the out of control Q where he's just going to do anything and he doesn't care about anything or anyone? But in this particular issue, I think he was under control for most of the time. I mean, he still did crazy things. And you know, as far as the captains, I'm looking forward to seeing how he interacts with other characters in this next issue. And as far as the art goes and the different panels, it was a little different than what I'm used to seeing from some of the other IDW books I've read. But overall, the art I would give about, an 8 out of 10. So it was pretty good.
Yeah, I didn't think it was bad at all. You know, it was decent. So what did you think about the book overall, PJ? Jamie gave it an 8.
I think I will give it an 8.5. I have the next issue. I'm really looking forward to checking it out. Can't wait to see who gets drafted into whose team. I think an 8.5 sounds about right.
How about you, Charles?
I'll go an 8.4.
8.4. Eric?
Yeah. I enjoyed this just a little less than Transformers this month. So I'm going to go 7.8, but I think it's going to get better next month.
Yeah, I think about 8 is about in the right area, I would say. That's a good, fair assessment is an 8. So there you go, guys. So both books we read this month, we all liked them. So run out and grab it, the Q Conflict, issue number 1. You won't be disappointed. I can pretty much guarantee that because not only myself, but my esteemed colleagues, my Trek-sperts, also agree. So pick up both these books. I think you're going to like them a lot. So Star Trek Discovery. I can't hold it in, guys. I'm sorry. I'm just too excited about this. Thursday night at 7:30, Trek Talking and Beyond. You guys, if you're listening, you need to be there. We're going to be talking about the latest episode where they go back to Talos IV and we run into the Talosians again. Light and Shadows is the name of the episode, and my God, was it awesome. I can't wait to talk about it on Thursday night. How about a little teaser for Thursday night just to get you guys wet, just to get you teased a little bit to make you tune in on Thursday night. So we ran a poll before the episode aired, and we did the same thing on the show. I asked each one of our Trek experts, and we even had a couple people call in. Will we see Vina on tonight's show was the question that I asked. And at that point in time, 54% of the people said, yes, we would see Vina. 54%. And I don't know. Eric, were you disappointed?
I was not disappointed. She was there, and she was amazing, and I loved what they did with her character. I loved everything. I have zero complaints about Vina in this episode. Unbelievable.
Nope. How about you, TJ? What did you think about Vina?
Oh, it was great. One of the many nods to the cage throughout the episode. It was awesome seeing her.
Vina, and I think the actress that they picked to play Vina was outstanding. A great job. How about you, Charles?
I saw her pop up, and how they worked her into the episode was so perfect. To have her in the episode to really kind of dedicate her to following what happened in the cage, they did a very good job with her. That was exactly, if we're going to put her in there, that was exactly how we needed her.
And what about you, Jamie? I know you don't know who Vina is, but being my daughter, I've tortured you with it enough that I'm pretty sure you know.
Yes, I know. I've seen the original Cage episodes quite a few times. I liked how they represented her in Discovery. In fact, I'm actually impressed. If you watch the Cage, or if you watch them side by side, they almost mirrored her image and just made her more modern. And said she just stepped out of the time machine into 2019. They did a great job with her actions, the way she presented herself on Talos IV. And if I might add, those plants, man, they really upgraded those too. I like them. I like how they did the CGI on those.
Yeah. The first of all, we're just teasing you guys a little bit. We're going to break this stuff down a lot more on Thursday night. So you guys are going to want to join us Thursday night. But the opening sequence, I was off the couch. When it started off with previously on Star Trek, and there's Vina, there's Pike, there's smiling Kirk, smiling Spock, the whole cage rewrap right there in front of you. Just what a way to start that episode. Just incredible. And I like the way when they ended it with Pike giving his captain's log, and then it changes from Jeffrey Hunter and right into Anson Mount on the bridge of the Discovery, giving his captain's log today. That transition from here's Jeffrey Hunter to here's our version, how seamless that transition went. And I also like the fact that they did that, because it's kind of like saying to all the Star Trek fans out there, you know what? We haven't forgotten what Kirk or what Pike look like and what Vina look like and what Talosians look like. We haven't forgotten that. And we're not trying to replace it. We're not trying to erase it. We're just presenting it in a more modern look, as like Jamie said. Instead of Vina looking like you know, somebody from the 60s, she looked like somebody from today. And I really liked how they presented that to Star Trek fans. It's like, hey, we're not stepping on your memories. We're not destroying your memories. In fact, here you go. We're gonna give it to you, and now we're going to transition from that to today. And I thought that was brilliant. I loved it, and I was just up off the couch going, oh, my God. If you guys were reading my texts in our Trek Talking page while I was watching it, I was blown away. Blown away. But like Jamie said, the one thing about Talos IV, and I don't know what they're called, so I'm going to call them the blue singing plants unless they actually have a name that I'm not aware of. But one of the things that makes Talos IV so unique is as soon as you land on the planet, you hear that buzzing, humming sound, and you know right away, those are the Talos IV singing plants, whatever they're called. And they got an upgrade, like Jamie said. Instead of just being little round blue paper things on a pipe cleaner, they were actually CGI'd flowers that closed up like a Venus flytrap when Michael Burnham touched them, which I thought was outstanding. I thought that Talos IV looked awesome. The whole thing looked awesome, and you guys need to tune in Thursday night to find out more about what we thought about this episode. So hopefully I'm teasing and tantalizing you enough to join. And don't forget, you can call us, 646-668-2433 on Thursday, and be part of the conversation. And we'd love to hear from you. So before we go, anybody else want to add anything in about what we're going to talk about Thursday or anything about this episode just to give our listeners a little nudge? TJ, anything you want to add?
No, you should definitely tune in. I've got lots of thoughts on it.
Lots of stuff. How about you, Charles?
I think I need to go back and rewatch it again so I'm fresh for Thursday.
That's a good idea.
I think I know what my... Yeah.
How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I think if I start talking now, the floodgates are just going to open, and we don't have time for that. So I better not mention anything else right now.
No, I just I'm so excited about it. It was that good. You know,
I guess we talk about Discovery.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, since you mentioned the plants, I'll just say the one thing is that I love that they totally mirrored that scene with Burnham. You know, she basically comes in and she does exactly what Spock does when they both see those plants for the first time. So I just love that. Since you mentioned the plants, I'll just mention that one thing.
Yeah, I was going to mention, if anybody noticed, because Jamie noticed that as well, that the Burnham seeing the plants for the first time was exactly the way Spock saw the plants for the first time, and which I thought was another awesome homage. But they're related, so that wasn't a surprise. But this episode was just full of so much that, I don't want to go too much into it. So I want to stick with Vina and the blue plants for right now, because otherwise we'll get off on all kinds of other stuff. Now, we might actually have Leslie Hoffman joining us on Thursday to talk about this episode as well. All the more reason for you guys to tune in or call in. But, I'm surprised. I'm not surprised, but one of the things I love about Discovery, every week when we do our show, the episode is great. And every week that we talk about our show, the episode that we're talking about always seems to top the episode that we talked about the week before. And it's amazing that they can continue to do that week after week after week. Just throw more stuff in there to throw us off track, to make us say, wow. And I think that's great.
Well, one of the things that we were talking about before the show, Jim, was that we have noticed a general trend toward some of the folks who didn't think much of Discovery in the beginning. It feels like the commentary is becoming a little bit more positive. More and more people are saying, wow, this is great. And, you know, whether that's the release of season one on the Blu-ray or whether it's season two of Discovery coming out, it seems like a lot of people are starting to come around to it now. And I, for one, am glad to see the uptick in positivity and positive comments versus folks just trying to always tear it down. It's been refreshing.
It has been. It really, really has been. I agree. I'm not getting booted off Facebook as much as I was before, which is cool. anyways, that wraps up Comic Corner. When will our next Comic Corner be? Will be on, let me get my calendar here. I hate this calendar that's sideways. Will be on April 8th will be our next Comic Corner. I think we're going to do a double Comic Corner. You guys are going to have to keep an eye on the Facebook page, but we have a lot of books to cover, and we don't want to get too far behind. So our next Comic Corner might have a few more titles in it than just these two. I think we're going to end up actually doing Transformers 5 and 6 to wrap up that series, and Q-Conflict number 2, so that we can be up to date with all the new books that are coming out. But if you keep your eye on the Facebook page, you'll get that information. And don't forget to tune in to Stunt Treks with yours truly, Uncle Jim, and the Leslie Hoffman on Sunday night from 7 to 8. We had a great show that Charles joined us for when we talked about conventions and stuff and convention appearances. And next week we're going to talk about aliens and alien makeup on Sunday night. So if you're into makeup and aliens, how long does it take to become a Cardassian, you want to tune in. So check that out Sunday night. And TJ, what's going on around Freakopolis Geekery before that nice lady tells us we have to leave?
Yeah, I'd like to mention a couple things. So the Freakopolis Geekery is my comic and game shop in Whitehall, New York. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube. Just search Freakopolis, freakopolis.com. There's a bunch of attack wing ships there and a bunch of role-playing game stuff. And I'd love to ship out some fans some cool stuff. But we have some cool events this week. Wednesday night from 5 to 8 is an Earth X HeroClix draft. The other couple things I really want to mention are this weekend. Saturday from 5 to 8 p.m. is we're doing a demo of a game that's currently being kickstarted called Super High School Destiny Rumble. It's sort of a Powered by the Apocalypse role-playing game that is for fans of My Hero Academia or maybe Naruto. Some really cool local game developers are making it, and it's on Kickstarter for like the next 5 days. They're really close to their goal. Looking forward to playing that in the store on Saturday. And then Sunday, Uncle Jim's coming by to run through some of the Star Trek Adventures starter kit he picked up this past week. So also very much looking forward to that. I think is there still some seats left?
We have 5 seats available. Brett wants to be the Andorian security chief, so we have a couple left, yes.
Nice. I won't stop anybody else from joining the table if we start to fill up.
We're going to do the first adventure in the starter set, and we'll do all 3 of those. If we have time, we'll get through as many as we can, but since none of us have ever played it before, it'll probably take us a little bit to get through the first game, but I plan on doing that. You know, if we get enough people interested, I plan on continuing to do that. So that should be fun. And so that wraps up our show, guys. So thank you to everybody. Thank you to Jamie and Eric and Charles and TJ for hanging out. And thanks. Oh, there's that lady. Thank you to all you guys for listening. It was great. You can find links to Freakopolis Geekery on our Facebook page and click on that and go right to TJ and he'll help you right out. And don't forget to tune in Thursday night for Trek Talking and Beyond. We're going to have a lot of fun. All right. Have a good night, everybody. And we'll talk to you again on Thursday night. Good night.
Night. Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.